Hey, Carl, good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Thank you for joining us for a WMOT event and coming through Nashville on probably a whirlwind promotional tour of a new record. Where's your travels lately? And
well, this is it. This is I reside here at least part of the time now, and about to be full time. So, yeah, I'm just living life at the moment, and just happened to hear about this and get the invite. So here I am.
Well, I wanted to start with your life in New York, the parts of it that have been there, and kind of when you shifted your point of view to this. It must be something. How much familiarity you have with the city, what the impact of living in the city, and just tell me a little bit about that phase of your life and how it's been going.
New York. Well, I spend a lot of time up there. I'm not sure I take full advantage of the city when I'm there, and that I'm usually coming back from, you know, the road, or spending time with my son, or bouncing around. And when I'm in New York, you know, we just settle in, so it's something I wish I had done when I was a younger man. I wish I had done when I was 25, and I probably would have gotten the full experience. As it is, it's been really cool to get that experience. I'm a little more settled now, so I'm not out every night taking it all in. Uh-huh. I much prefer the vibe here in Tennessee, and being able to have a yard and a community and friends around. I think everybody's so busy or broke in New York that you don't ever get to see them. And here in Nashville, broke or not, people have plenty of time that seems to come over and sit on the porch and pick a song and talk.
Right, nice. Can you talk a little bit about like how you and Allison have figured out, have sort of envisioned this move, and what had to go right to make it happen, and what you're looking forward to, like you're alluding?
Well, we just there's a lot that went into it, but you know, just trying to bring our lives together. And I was coming from Texas, she was from New York, and you know, finding that place that worked for us in our lives. So she lived here for I don't know, a dozen, 15 years, and I had spent a lot of time. I've made 3 records here and done a lot of work here and had a lot of friends here. And I felt, outside of Austin, that there was no place in the country where I had more community and felt more at home. And this, since this had been her home, we just figured this was the place. This is where we wanted to get back to.
Well, I was struck by the number of songs that you and Allison co-wrote on this record. And I don't know if that was true of any past ones or not, but tell me about the co-writing relationship. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky to have my partner be somebody that's at times my creative partner. Mm-hmm. And so I've got, you know, I watch her work and she watches me, and occasionally we chime in and give each other input. So it's nice. I'll get stumped on something or have an idea, or, you know, I have my way of approaching things, which is not flawless, and to be able to take it to somebody that I respect and trust and who has this wealth of sort of musical knowledge and ability, I feel very lucky to have that. So I don't know how we started out writing. I think Allison invited me to we started out just writing, you know, haikus and poems to each other, and she invited me to a session that she had with Matresa Berg here in town. Uh-huh. It was the first time that I think we actually wrote together, and we got a song out of it that ended up on this record. And
yeah, which one does that remind me? I remember seeing
Jesus and Elvis.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then we've got other friends. Adam Landry is in town, that another situation where Allison had done a lot of work with him, and she brought me in to write, and I ended up getting several co-writes with Adam, with Allison and without. So mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just we bring different things to the table as far as our point of view and perspective, and But we have a lot in common as well. So it's been a good partnership, and it's fun to get to do the thing I love with the person I love.
It strikes me how, so I courted my wife in New York City when I was living here, and it was such an extraordinary thing to walk in New York. I mean, that was just a lot of our time was just walking. And you walk and you talk and you see, and it strikes me that you could easily, in conversations like that in that city, song ideas could pop up every few blocks.
Yeah, there's
a provocative place.
There's millions and millions of lives. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I've written about in the past has been other people's lives, you know, the observational. For me, it was in places, you know, much more remote than New York, where I could really sit down and do the character studies. But yeah, there's no shortage of stories, real or imagined, in New York. But this record, it's a little less it's a little more internal. It's a little more about my life and what I was doing directly, rather than the observing of others' lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, still though, feelings that you're having about the exterior world going in all the directions that it's going in. I love the song "Wild Pointy Finger." I just think that the idea that opinion in this country has become this, it was always everybody's right, but now it's sort of like on steroids with, you know, no thought necessary, no information necessary, and people just jump on each other. Is that what the song's about?
Yeah, to some degree. And the more offensive, the more celebrated. I mean, the less thought the less sensitivity involved, the less nuance involved, the obviously the bigger platform it's going to get. You see that happening politically, and yeah, so it's about judgmental people. It's one I wrote with Adam Landry, and he had the idea, and I liked it. I love the idea of the folks walking around pointing their finger at everybody and judging but never having the self-awareness or the courage to, you know, turn the finger around on themselves. Mm-hmm. So
just occurred to me, do you find it particularly hard, as a songwriter, one would want to comment on, you know, digital culture is has become culture, and it's the place that has given people this platform, the anonymity to be just assholes to other people, but it's also very hard to write the terminology of the digital era into songs. You start writing about clicks and likes and shares and all that you seem to have done something that evokes the digital storm without using it directly. Bill Lloyd's got a new song that's a little more direct, and he does kind of reference, you know, the phone and the feed and the scrolling and having to, like, it's about his song's about attention. Mm-hmm. About, you know, can I just have you for 100% for a few seconds here?
Right.
But I'm curious about how you maybe tried to wrestle with whether that, you know, all this terminology that when we talk about the digital world, kind of makes it harder to actually say what's going on emotionally, socially.
Well, are you referring to that song specifically, "The Wild Pointing Finger"?
Just as you think about it as an issue, and as a, you know, a folk singer trying to say what's going on, this is kind of some madness. And
yeah, I mean, I remember, I think it was Ricky Skaggs had a song where he mentioned the GPS, and I remember thinking, what? It was a cool song, but that stood out at me as like, when did that get into music? Like, you know, when the hard drive and the Instagram and Facebook, when did that become part of the language? It's interesting, and it's sort of a disconnect. It feels disconnected. Mm-hmm. Because you have, on one hand, you have this ancient, you know, art, and medium communication, and then but then we're talking about you know, I guess same thing could be said about when people started singing about airplanes. So I don't know, and those have somehow survived in music. Yeah, but that one, I just you know, again, it was just about judgmental people, and whether it's online or in person, everyone is so certain and so right in their ideas, and is so unwilling, seemingly, to stop and listen to anybody else's and consider that there might be a very valid other opinion. And it's just so much easier to criticize and point and shame and name than to be civil and have an open discourse. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, that's the thing that drives me crazy and really frustrates and disheartens me, is that how are we going to evolve if we can't talk to each other? Because if you can't talk, what does that leave you? To win the argument, you know, it's either violence or an increasingly negative slander or use of different facts, or there's not a way to get out of it and still respect each other. And that's what I see sort of nationwide happening that bothers me, is I don't want to hate people because they vote a certain way.
Sure.
I don't feel like I should be hated because I vote a certain way, because I think at the end of the day, we may disagree about something, but you and I can sit down and have a conversation, and we care about the same things, for the most part, 98%. And so that's upsetting to me to watch, that the ability to communicate and converse and come together and have any kind of respect for each other seems to be disappearing, and I think that's a really dangerous trend that's happening. So this song was, I guess, a lighthearted way of pointing out those people, or it's, I guess, the narrator is one of those people, but and at least has a self-awareness in the end to say my wild pointy finger's never pointing back at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been struck over the last couple of years interviewing social songwriters. In general, the artists seem more bothered by the divide than the era that we kind of think of as the gold, you know, that sort of rush of social songwriting in the 60s, when it was more about which side are you on, and about proclaiming what was righteous, and the divide was acknowledged, but it was like, which, you know, are you on our side or not? And now people are kind of upset by the divide itself, because it's disturbing. And like you said, there's not many alternatives.
Well, I just feel like we should know better by this point. And there's going to be a divide. There's going to be differences of opinion, and there's going to be things that people feel strongly about. But we should know better than to continually be led into we have to hate our neighbors to get power, to win an election. We have to diminish what somebody else believes in, diminish their life, their contributions.
Well, another song, though, that's a little more pointed and does, I think, take issue with a kind of posture is Fragile Men. Mm-hmm. when was there a specific thing you read or saw that kind of accumulated impressions triggered the song?
Well, yeah, so I wrote that with Lolo, an artist named Lolo, and originally we started writing it about her experiences in the music business and just dealing with patriarchy and a lot of the men in the world that in her professional world that in the experiences she was having, which weren't always positive. But about a week after we started the song, Charlottesville happened, and the images of these neo-Nazis and khaki pants with their tiki torches shouting "Jews will not replace us" at night as they marched on the campus was really incredibly unsettling to both of us. And we got back together and said, this is who we're writing about. These are the fragile men. These are the people who cannot handle change. They cannot handle evolution. They're stuck. And the idea that they feel, or they have to present that they are threatened, that they are under attack, that they are losing something to equality or integration or whatever it may be, immigration, mm-hmm. Is you know, laughable to me, and that they then resort to violence or intimidation or threats is not laughable. It's awful. There's a long history of that, that just, it's really troubling to see it come back in such a public way. And so that was, we decided to finish the song up about that, and then made a little music video. Lolo sang a version of it, and we made a video just trying to make fun of them and show them at their most weak and ridiculous.
A pulling back question. First saw you perform at Merlefest. Must have been about 2002, something like that. You were right on your first.
That was a minute ago, yeah.
Right on your first record.
I remember the No Depression said this band, the Avett Brothers, sounded really good. And it's been a minute.
It stuck with me because you were kind of hangdog, and you were wearing a white T-shirt and rumpled, I guess I might use the word. But then you had the audience on the Hillside stage wrapped around your finger because of your humor and your wordplay and something about the, I don't know, you just approached this crowd in a way I'd never quite seen anybody do. It was cool.
Which reminds me, that's why I told Allison Moore that I had a crush on her, from the stage. There, she's sitting right here, so she's looking at me, but you remember that?
From the stage? Like that was part of your rap?
I did.
Your rap?
Right before him.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, before me. So I got up on stage and immediately announced that I had a crush on her. We were friends.
I'd like to thank my secret crush, Allison Moore, for opening for me.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah. Smooth move, Carl.
Yeah, that
Carl,
was, that's, I was, well done. That was the long play. It took 12 years for the whole plan to come together. But, yeah.
Well, how different an artist do you think you are now versus then? There's a lot of similarities. I still love the way you bring that wry thing. But I know you've changed. What do you think it is?
I mean, I think there's elements that are the same, and that I love clever wordplay. I love being able to capture an emotion and make it relatable, and through language. I still tell long, meandering stories with no point on stage, and I still have similar musical interests, but I guess the difference for me would be, just as a writer, I feel like I've evolved, and Allison and I were talking about it this afternoon. There was, for a long time, the stuff I was writing about, but occasionally very personal. I never presented it. I rarely presented it as such. I wasn't examining my own life as an artist and then putting it out there. Hmm. If I did put any of my own stuff out there, it was usually under somebody else's. I was using a character to present it. And also it was much more observational of other people. And I feel like the last two records, the last record and this one that's about to come out, I feel like there's been some growth there, and that I've been able to find some really important territory to mine as an artist and a songwriter, and get okay with that. The reason I didn't do it is because it can be uncomfortable. You're really showing yourself and some vulnerability required for that, and that's not the most comfortable thing. But so I, as far as ways that I've changed and grown, I think that would be it. And it's something I'm proud of, that and just stay in the same place and was able to open up a little bit and dig a little deeper.
I was talking to Tommy Womack recently here in town, and he's has a similar jaundiced eye, I would say, about the world. But he said that when he shifted point of view and his emphasis as a writer about himself, and wrote very candidly about his family, about his son, about his just what, you know, that he said, once you go memoir, you can't, there's no going back.
Yeah, that's the truth.
And it's,
yeah, other stuff feels not quite as important. It's fun, and it's still, it can absolutely have meaning. But right now, like this record we've just done, there's so many things on there that have direct meaning to me and are, that I can stand behind and say, that's my voice and that's my sentiment. And that's a really good feeling to be able to line up your life with your art and your point of view. And maybe it's not the thing I need to do at all times, but right now it feels good because it's something I haven't done a whole lot of in the past.
Great place to sign off. Thanks a lot, Hayes.
Thanks for having me, Craig. Appreciate it.